Welcome to another Celtic Stuff Live post-game podcast. Tonight with me is JB and Eric Weiss, who's been getting into the locker room and using those press credentials to get some valuable interviews you've read on Celtics blog and on Celtic Stuff Live. Eric, thanks for joining us. Tonight, the Celtics dropped their ninth in a row to the Toronto Raptors, 96-90. There were some encouraging signs there in the second quarter and also the third quarter, but ultimately the Celtics fall short again. I think Al Jefferson played fantastic, matched up against Chris Bosh, and I think that's probably the most encouraging sign, especially there was a little stretch there where there was a lot of nice passing going on between Perkins into the paint to Green, and the same kind of Jefferson made a similar pass. Those things are nice to see, and I personally am not too worried about the Celtics winning games right now. What's your stance, Eric?
I don't think that winning has anything to do with what this team's objective is right now. I think the only thing that you can really look at is you're looking for stuff, you know, start with Al. And one of the things that a lot of the negative posters on the board, the doomsdayers, have been talking about is trying to break down what Al Jefferson is not doing inside the numbers. And one of the arguments was that he was only producing effective statistics against weak defensive competition, which, I mean, whatever. That had some credence to it until this last week, where he's gotten his rematch games against Chris Bosh's rematch game about a week and a half after he first faced him. And in that game against Tim Duncan, what Jefferson's figuring out is how to score effectively as the primary option. A lot of people were on him when Pierce was gone. He was only shooting 46%, which is not terrible, but not great for an interior guy. But over the last eight games, he's shooting back up to his normal, 50% level, and he's starting to use that jumper and all that. And I mean, that's really what you got to look at. No team that has an effective inside-outside scoring tandem is not a playoff team. I mean, that's just a fact of life in the NBA. And as goes Jefferson, so goes the team, regardless of anything else, including draft picks or anything. With a dominant wing and a dominant interior scorer, you can make up for a lot of deficiencies.
Well, he had five assists tonight. I think that's probably a career high for him. Tommy Heinsohn was gushing throughout the broadcast that is going to give him further room, further space to score, that they won't be able to double up on him quite as intensely if he's able to continue to find cutters and open men. That was a great performance.
Well, not only that, but his face-up jumper is... He's starting to hit that with regularity at 10 for 16 from the field tonight. And, we've been seeing that pretty regularly out of him. He's going out to even 16 feet sometimes. I'm very encouraged by that because that changes everything. Now players, defenders are biting on his head fake, and it's a pretty quick one. And we've seen him get by his man and throw down some good dunks recently. Inspired performance by Jefferson tonight, given the fact that he tweaked his ankle here a couple days ago.
And given the fact that he still can't get to the free throw line because it won't call anything for him. But
Well, the fouls were a big part of tonight's game. The Celtics got called for 29, and Toronto only got called for 12. And then also, not only just the number of fouls that were called, but the Celtics going 9 for 14 on the 14 free throws that they did get to shoot. I also thought they allowed a lot of offensive rebounds to Toronto when they clearly had a rebounding edge over the Raptors. That was a little disconcerting. There were at least a handful of possessions where the Raptors had three opportunities to score, and you're not going to win games when you're allowing that.
Well, we had a big rebounding edge in the first half, and then Doc went small for a big portion of the third and early fourth quarter. I think way too long. It wasn't working. That's our edge on Toronto, is muscle and size inside. Bosch doesn't want to bang. Nesterovic is a little flat-footed. And that's where we had the advantage, not by going small. Toronto matched up with us small, and that's where they got back in the game. One other note, I'll just throw it in here. That foul shooting edge is even more glaring when you see that Toronto took 29 threes. We took 18 threes. I mean, it was obvious all night long without even looking at the number. We were driving to the basket all night and going inside all night, and they were standing out and shooting jump shots. So how the referees can make those calls?
Well, the referees obviously had a hand in it. If the Celtics shoot 48% from the field to take two more shots than the Raptors shoot 41% from the field with two less shots. You know, fouls definitely come into play no matter how many three-pointers were shot, because that's a pretty big discrepancy in field goal percentage. You know, Gerald Green maybe took too many three-pointers. He went 2-for-10 beyond the arc. You know, Eric, what's your take on Gerald Green? How far along is he, and how far does he have to go to really become a prolific scorer in the league?
He's got a long way to go before he becomes a prolific scorer. I mean, I don't think you're going to see him in the prolific category, you know, on his rookie deal. I don't think, you know, I think he can become, I don't even want to put a number on it. There's so many variables on this team. But, I mean, he's come a long way in his first 2 years. You know, I think it's unfortunate that a lot of these guys on this team live with expectations of production based off of God knows what it is that creates it. And I worry about guys like Rondo and guys like Gerald Green, who, you know, are very popular right now, but just like Al Jefferson, you know, how quickly, you know, does the fan base turn on you when you don't suddenly do what you're, you know, quote-unquote, supposed to do? You know, these guys have limitations to their game. Jefferson and Green were extremely raw coming in. Rondo has a fundamental, you know, error in his game that he has to fix, which is not going to just work itself out. And, you know, these players, the key is developmental progress, not hitting benchmarks that are established, you know, kind of fictitiously. And, I mean, Gerald's fine. He was not supposed to ever be in the position that he's in right now. And now teams are game planning for him because he burned them a lot. And they know that he can't dribble very well. He'd prefer to go right than to go left. They're taking certain things away from him. And he's recalibrating himself. He's taking shots in the perimeter, waiting for the ball to swing. He hasn't been put in motion very much the last week or so. It's a difficult adjustment. His game grew leaps and bounds, but then his responsibility throughout this season grew leaps and bounds too. And I think that kind of outpaced where he had built his game up. He would have been nice off the bench. Now he's a starter, basically the only effective wing scorer other than Allen Ray. So it's kind of a tough spot to be in for a young kid. And I hope, I think he'll be fine. But a lot of people, I've heard the rumblings, people starting to second guess their opinions of him. And that's just foolish, you know, not in the season. You don't do that inner season, you know. There's no way.
Yeah, you have to take more of a long-term perspective. Let's talk a little bit about the play of Scalabrine. I know that he didn't score any points, and, you know, I don't think anybody really counts on him for that kind of contribution, but I thought he played some pretty good defense in the second quarter on Chris Bosh. You know, he stayed in front of his man, had a hand on him. He got pushed Chris Bosh away from the basket. I think Scalabrine's weight advantage over Chris Bosh helped him out a little bit there. He was really able to box Bosh out, and I thought he played some really inspired defense there in his first game back in his Celtics uniform. Is that what you saw as well?
So the Celtics pregame put up all the keys to the game on their whiteboard, and they put everybody's shooting percentage down from the field and from three, and they have the available tendencies in their pregame prep, just like college guys and every other pro. But Scal's one of those guys that we know that he's got to study that stuff. I think a lot of these guys, especially the young guys, it's just a natural tendency to not pay as strict attention. And that's when you talk about vets, you know, even guys like Wally Szczerbiak, who straight up man-to-man are defensively deficient, these guys tend to be more aware of what those subtleties are, the tendencies. So even if they're not, you know, maybe the most physically gifted at whatever they do, they're still able to have some success by taking away the primaries from people. And I think that's what you see from Scout. He knows where to hit a guy, which way to funnel him. He gets beat by straight-up athleticism a lot, but he's not a guy that's going to get caught flat-footed as often, and he definitely knows how to play the odds, because I see him actually, you know, going and doing that. And that's those little things, one of the little things. It still doesn't negate no productivity. You know, you don't play a guy like that 30 minutes just because he read the, you know, the improve the scouting report, but at the same time, it's something that if once the younger players start realizing that to take their next step, they have to incorporate that kind of stuff. That's what Scal brings, and certainly he did that tonight. That's what he's all about.
Yeah, it was nice to see him playing close into the basket, too, which is where he played in New Jersey, and he was much more effective down low. I just love that wicked grin on his face when one of the Raptors is on the floor and he's running back up court, or maybe they just called a foul on him. But he really seems to enjoy knocking people down, and it's good to have somebody on the floor at all times who protect the basket. They don't score any layups when he's under there, and I really got tired of seeing him catch the ball in the perimeter and try to take a three dribble drive to the basket. That's not his game. And
well, you make a really good point, JB. They have changed the way that they're utilizing Scalabrine, and it's making a difference in his performance on the court. Still not going to throw up stats, but I think he's making more of a positive contribution. Do you still wish Leon Poe was getting the minutes, JB?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to lose these games, and Eric was giving us a little bit of history of how the team's perspective has changed over the last month or so, especially since Tony Allen went down, about trying to win, and we're going to get to that in a minute. I'm going to ask Eric exactly what Doc could have done in this game to try to win the game as opposed to what he did do. I guess it takes incompetence and turns it into genius, perhaps, but we ought to run it down. But Poe, I mean, in under these circumstances, why don't you give him 15 minutes a game? I don't know. Perkins was held to 20, and he needs to be held down in his minutes. We're using a lineup with Scalabrine and Green and Golems up front. I especially against a team like Toronto, I want more size up front and more guys that'll bang, and I think that's how you beat Toronto.
Well, Eric, we're going to be wrapping up here in just a couple of minutes, but why don't you answer the question about what Doc could have done to help the Celtics win this game?
Well, okay, I just want to make sure, phrase my opinion is that he based off of the move that he intentionally put some guys in that would disrupt certain things without being blatantly obvious. You can't sit Al Jefferson down for the entire fourth quarter and not have that affect what the players are thinking. But, putting Sebastian Telfair and Gerald Green back in the game at the five-minute mark when they hadn't played effectively or at all, in Telfair's case, it's way at the beginning of the game. I mean, Doc's not daft. I mean, that's a blatant move. And sitting Jefferson for 6 minutes of the fourth quarter instead of just maybe two and a half, which is all anyone really needs for a rep on the bench, plus the fourth quarter difference in time of 5 minutes. I mean, that looks like an engineered move to disrupt kind of the flow. I mean, they hadn't been scoring on every possession, certainly not, but to make those moves to shake things up or whatever, to add offensive boosts, I mean, that's the alibi, I think. But I think the intent is to lose games. And in the bigger picture, that makes sense from a strategic standpoint. No one wants to hear it. But I think that's what they're doing.
Well, I can tell you that I want to hear it. That's exactly what I want to hear. That is music to my ears. I don't care how they mask it. I mean, I know it's been a risk with, Tim Duncan in the past, but I think it's the right move, and I think that it's the only way that this franchise is really going to get things turned around in a hurry.
It's a far deeper draft than the Tim Duncan draft, too. You're not playing for one guy. You're playing for one of probably six or seven guys there's 10 guys that will upgrade the front court position. That's all you're really looking for out of this draft. There's one more complimentary starter, someone to push Perkins for those minutes, opposite Jefferson, and really solidify the rotation. You still have all the assets. There's one more asset, one more bullet in the gun to play the market after that, and there's going to be a ton of available players. As the draft discusses in the next 3 months, I'm going to be breaking down each team and looking at their outlook based off of the players they have currently on their roster, the money they have committed to them, their organizational direction, and start looking at the draftable players as well as the free agent acquisitions that make sense for these teams. And the Celtics are in prime position. People are, it's tough with what's happened to this team this year, and it certainly wasn't the plan going into this year, but no team's plan is to have you know, basically an unprecedented rash of injuries. And it really is. I've never seen a volume of injuries, long-term injuries like this team sustained. And there's just nothing you can game plan for. And when you get hit with something like that, the only thing you can do when you're in that kind of situation with Ostern is to go with the best available option. And the odds say that is, in a draft like this year, is not to see how things settle out and take your pick, but to lean towards the pick. Because why fight for 33, 34, 35 wins when you can simply rest everybody up, accept the fact that it wasn't in the cards for this year, and then come out better for it?
Well, absolutely. Hey, just want to let everybody know here as we're wrapping up that Celtic Stuff Live is going to be broadcasting back on its regular night, Sunday night, but we are going to be broadcasting after the game. It's a post-game show after the game against the Wizards, so be sure to join us, and we'll see you then.
It's also our one-year anniversary, Jug.
That's right.
And I hope Eric will join us. He's one of our most informed and thoughtful guests and loyal to us since we started. I hope you'll join us a bit if you can for that show, Eric. And I'd like to close with some Gasol news. There's a little article in the Commercial Appeal quoting Powell. On being traded. He says, "I love being in Memphis. I'm still here and I'm still competing. For people to second guess my professionalism and my willingness to work is a real shame. I've been here the longest. I'm loyal to my team. I'm a loyal person. But from what I hear, I'm getting lambasted. It's unfair." So, he says he's going through the article that he's not opposed to a trade, but he wants to finish his career in Memphis. So, knowing that and looking around the scoreboard tonight, I found it a little bit odd that Gasol didn't play. he didn't dress for the game against San Antonio. ESPN News reported that he had a hamstring problem. The message boards are starting to speculate that there's already been a trade come down, but there's no word on that. So I think we'll just have to wait and see in the next 24 hours and see if he really does have hamstring problems or whether I think Chicago isn't playing tonight, so we can't look and see who didn't suit up for Chicago. But anyway, it was a little bit strange to read his disclaimer and then to see he wasn't playing.
Yeah, well, all that and more on Sunday night. There's definitely a lot to talk about, the Celtics' future and what they're doing now to get there. So be sure to join us again after the game Sunday night.
Thank you all.